Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about snow. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. I have something hot and delicious on the side table next to me. It's some spicy orange tea in a tall mug, nice and hot. I'm looking out through the studio window over the producer's shoulder, and it is coming down. The snow is coming down, and we're asking you to join us in telling snow stories. It might be memories that you have from a long time ago about snow. Maybe you have traditions right now in your life. What I can see out there through the studio window is that it's steady and pretty heavy. You know, there's a kind of snow that when it comes down with the quality of rain, you just know this is going to be a lasting snow. This is one of those rare occasions where the shoreline in Connecticut and New York, all along the east end of Long Island, is going to get whacked pretty good, probably much more than inland from what they tell us, although things change so quickly in weather. So I'm up on the second floor right now, and there is a giant tree in our window, and the snow is starting to get caught on the branches, on the rooftops, on the windowsills. It's getting quieter and quieter out there. There's a little bit of a blow in the air, so the snow's coming down straight, but it's also going sideways. And it's caused us here in the studio to think back to what it was like. So we want to invite you to join us for, I guess, memories of snow. 203-776-9677. 203-776-WNPR. I want to tell you that right now there's an article at our website, WNPR.org. Just click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. And this is from Discover Magazine. It's one of the best articles I've ever read on the complexity in a simple snowflake. It's very personally written, takes about 8 minutes to read, and it is terrifically done. And so I'm going to quote a little bit from that because we were all saying just before the show started, what is it like, that snowflake? Why does it have that structure? Why does it come down? What is this thing about that we experience? 203-776-9677. When I think of snow stories, it's funny what sticks in your mind. What comes into my head is a time when I was with a lot of people who love to cross-country ski, and I don't really care about it. So I said, we went to Queechee, and it was either Vermont. I think it's in Vermont. And so they got their snowshoes on, and they all went off. And I brought my bathing suit, and I went to the lodge and to the swimming pool, which the water was so hot. And I looked through the windows, and the snow was coming down. And while everybody was skiing, I was floating around in this hot swimming pool. It was so beautiful. And then off to the lodge I went for a cognac. It was terrific. So, Mike, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Faith. I want to tell a story about, I'm a young man, I'm 26, but I don't remember the last time I was having fun in the snow. As long, far back as I remember, I had to help my dad shovel out apartment rentals that he had, shoveling out snow, and I was never allowed to have fun in the snow. Until just a few years ago, I believe it was early 2012, when it snowed so much in one storm, and then there was like a day where it didn't snow, and then the following day after that, it snowed again, like another 10 to 12 inches. Like it accumulated to the point where it was like 8 feet of snow on the side of the road sometimes, and like after the bulldozer was plowed it. But it was the first time in a long time that it was too much snow. I was allowed to go and forget it and just enjoy it. And instead of kind of freaking out about how much snow there was, I actually sat back and enjoyed the snow in my adulthood.
I love that story. Mike, that's the best story. There is a thing where if it's part of your task to do the shoveling, you just see it as you're describing as work.
Yeah.
You know, and you associate it with danger and, all that stuff. And for once, you got the pleasure of the thing. Where are you right now?
I'm actually, I'm on my way home from New London, Connecticut, to Willimantic, Connecticut, and I just tuned into the show.
Is it slippery? How are the roads?
I'm going on 395 North. It's not terrible because, too, I've been driving on it. The side roads are, it's not super slippery yet, but it's coming down quick enough where I don't want to be out here.
Yep. Okay. Well, everybody go slow. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Faith.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Hope you enjoyed this one.
Thank you.
Okay. 203-776-WNPR. We're telling snow stories on the show for obvious reasons. We're going to get to this article from Discover Magazine. It's at our website right now, WNPR.org. It is great, great reading. If you have kids, you might want to read this together with them or read it to them, because the science of the snowflake is so beautiful. And astonishing. Teresa, hi, it's Faith. Go ahead.
How are you?
Hi, great. Good to have you on the show.
Well, we have, my birthday is in March, and I remember back like 10 years ago maybe there was a big snowstorm, and I was feeling very sad because people were supposed to come over. And out of nowhere, maybe about 10 o'clock, I see my friend Steve showing up in his truck and, you know, driving crazy to get to my house for snow, my birthday. And ever since then, we have a tradition now, and it's funny, I just texted them, him and his wife, every time there's a snowstorm, we always decide to get together for dinner. In the last couple of months, we've had these great dinners where one of us will just text the other. So the snow for us means that usually she's a teacher, she has the day off, and we get together at night, and we have wine. Sometimes we sleep over each other's house, so it doesn't have to be a weekend. So that's sort of what it means to us now, getting together for these impromptu snow dinners.
Oh, that is great. That is so, so great. I've never thought about a tradition like that. Although, Teresa, I have a friend, Rose Quiello, who's on the book show that I do, and we always used to say that the first snow of the season, we would call each other up and we would head to Essex, because Essex, the town of Essex, Connecticut, is particularly beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
In the snow. We saw it once just after a snowstorm, and we said this would be our tradition. But you're making me long for this now with Rose. We should do this much more often. Thank you.
I just sent a text saying I'm going to get ready to make a Thai fish soup for tonight. Yeah.
Wow,
so that's
good.
That's our tradition for snow.
Nice. Thanks so much. Glad you called.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Snow stories on the show. Do we have Jose? Hey, Jose, thanks. Jose, sorry about that. Jose, thank you for calling 203-776-9677. Go ahead, Jose. Jose.
Hi, Jose. First time, long time. Good. And just want to say that this reminds me of, as a kid growing up here in the city of New Haven, two things. It reminds me of ice skating at the old Edgewood Park ice skating rink.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid. And number two was sled riding or tobogganing down East Rock on the first slope there before you go up to the summit now. They close that off. But that's what it reminds me of. I'm 50 years old, and I'm like, wow, where are my skates? And where is it, my old sled?
Hey, that must have been some hill up there.
Oh, yeah. And it was fun. You know, I come from a large family, so, you know, there was seven of us and always a friend. So, you know, you're always 12, 13, 14 kids you're going skating or sled riding with. So it was always a great time.
I know. The other day, I have these two little 5-year-old twins that are my neighbors, and we've become such great friends. I just am madly in love with these kids. And they had their first sleds, and so they were, you know, barreling down the hill in my yard. I didn't really even realize that it would be good for sledding. But
let me tell you, and all I say is like, oh my God, it just brings me right back to, you know, the late 60s, the early 70s. It just brings me right back.
Yeah. You know, our studio is right in the middle of New Haven, and so it's pretty busy. We're right on the edge of the Yale University campus. We're in an arts district surrounded by buildings. And, you know, there's nowhere that I could look left or right to see any semblance of a hill anywhere. So I'm cut off from you know, the countryside where people really are sledding and the big parks. So I would like to get a glimpse of that myself. Maybe I'll try it.
I've often wondered, maybe we should start a petition or something to get that ice skating rink back open at Edgewood Park. When I was a kid, it was such, I mean, on a winter Sunday when you had nothing to do and it was cold, but the sun was out, my mom would load up the Vista Cruiser and just throw all the kids there for 4 or 5 hours and I'll see you later, you know?
Like, me too.
Whatever happened to that, you know, I missed that.
Yeah. When I was a kid, it was Bushnell Park in Hartford. Okay. I would go over there with all my friends and we would skate for a million hours. How fun.
Yes.
Thank you, Jose.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay.
Much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So snow stories on the show. I want to tell you a bit of this article. This is from Discover Magazine, The Scientific Complexity in a Seemingly Simple Snowflake. So there's a man who is sitting at a dinner party. This is how it begins. I'm going to skip to the part about the science of the snowflake. And so he writes this. Sitting around a table in the dusk of a candlelit supper, my friends and I exchange favorite recollections of winter's past. We talk sleds and toboggans and fierce snowball fights. I recall a childhood memory, a memory from London, the first time I heard the sound of falling snow. What did it sound like? The evening's host asks me. It sounded like someone slowly rubbing his hands together. Frowns outline my friend's concentration. Yes, they say, laughing. Yes, we can hear what you mean. A man sporting a gray mustache laughs louder than the others. I don't catch his name. He's not a regular guest. I gather he's some kind of scientist of indeterminate discipline. Do you know why we see snow as white? The scientist asks. We shake our heads. It's all to do with how the sides of the snowflakes reflect light. All the colors in the spectrum, he explains to us, scatter out from the snow in roughly equal proportions. This equal distribution of colors we perceive as whiteness. Now our host's wife has a question. The ladle with which she's been serving bowls of hot soup idles in the pot. Could the colors never come out in a different proportion, she asks. You know, sometimes if the snow is very deep, he answers, in which case the light that comes back to us can appear tinged with blue. And sometimes a snowflake structure will resemble that of a diamond, he continues. Light entering these flakes becomes so mangled as to dispense a rainbow of multicolored sparkles. Oh, and it goes on. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'd like to hear from you. Snow stories on the show for obvious reasons. 203-776-WNPR. That's 9677. We'll be right here, and we'll be right back. What we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Right now, you can find all kinds of delicious recipes, things for dinner, value wines, easy cocktails, and much more. Click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show. You can also find this remarkable article on the science of the snowflake. It's beautifully written and so fascinating in terms of science. We're going to quote from it throughout the show, but it's up right now. Catherine, thank you for calling 203-776-9677. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Great to have you on.
I'm glad to be on. I have a really great memory of a snow story. It was my freshman year in college, and it was reading period. It was early January. We had exams after Christmas, so during reading period, we have no classes. And it was a two-week period, and so that was January 1979. Anyhow, it's a terrific snowstorm, and about 8 o'clock at night, all the power went out. And so I lived on the yard, which is lots of freshman houses were on the yard. And so all the freshmen piled out into the blackness, and it was snowing like crazy. We couldn't do anything. Everybody was all stressed out because of exams. And so a huge snowball fight started. And literally there were like 400 kids.
Wow.
In a snowball fight, all together, all the freshmen. And so legions were formed with battle commanders, and we would actually, like, form rows and charge each other. And it was just, it was unbelievable. And for, like, 20 minutes, going on and on, snowballs were flying everywhere. It was just fantastic.
Oh, wow. So. You know, that I wonder if that set some kind of Guinness record. Does anybody know what's the Guinness record for the largest snowball fight?
I have no idea, but it was just, I mean, I'm sure that I'll never experience anything even close to that. It was just so much fun. It was so much fun.
Do you think of it every time there's a snowstorm?
Yeah, I do. I wish I could recreate it. It was just a blast.
Yeah, thanks so much. Glad you called. Good story.
Oh, sure.
Okay, bye-bye. I just got a tweet from Tucker Ives here at the station, and he says, when he was younger, he remembers his neighbor hit his sister with a sled, and she was whacked in the mouth and ended up with stitches. And I think, well, see, snow is both gorgeous and dangerous. Catherine, welcome to the show. I mean, I'm sorry, Gail, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faye.
Hi, Gail.
It's great to be on, and I love this topic. You can hear the excitement and the child in everyone coming out when they share their stories.
Yeah, that's true.
I just wanted to share a memory that came up to me the other day, and I put it out on Facebook, but nobody seemed to have remembered this. I'm wondering if any of the listeners remember putting on brand new Levi blue jeans to go out in the snow and break them in. That was the big thing I remember doing, and you would leave behind a big blue patch of snow, and then usually when you got it inside and took your clothes off, your legs had this sort of dyed blue tinge on them for a little bit. Do you remember doing that?
You know, that is so funny. I don't remember this blue stuff, but I remember that you had to wear jeans when you went out into the snow. They were the snow pants. You know,
right,
we didn't have official snow pants, but it was important that you wore jeans.
Right, but I do remember buying brand new Levi's.
Yeah.
And putting them on in order to break them in the snow. And you left behind, you know, maybe you didn't do that with brand new jeans.
Yeah.
But it would leave behind a big...
Yeah, funny. Really funny.
Anyway, I remember that really fun.
Somebody might remember this.
Well, hopefully somebody will call in, because I'd be interested to hear somebody else with the same memory.
Yeah, thanks so much, Gail.
Thank you.
Glad you called. Okay. See the things that, talk about association. The snow just falls from the sky. So we're at this dinner party in this article. And this article that's at our website about the complexity of the snowflake. And somebody asks, is it true that no two snowflakes are alike? And this comes from the daughter of the host of this dinner party. And the scientist is at the table, and he says, it is true. Imagine the complexity of a snowflake. Every snowflake has a basic six-sided structure, but its spiraling descent through the air sculpts each hexagon in a unique way. The minutest variations in air temperature or moisture can and do make all the difference. Like mathematicians who categorize every number into prime numbers or Fibonacci numbers or triangle numbers or square numbers according to its properties, so researchers subdivide snowflakes into various groupings according to type. I had no idea about this. It's so interesting. James, go ahead. James, you there? Hello, one more time. James? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, there you are. James, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Faith. Yeah, I was thinking back in my childhood. We used to start sledding in my backyard in Kensington, and we would slide all the way down across our neighbor's yard and get down towards the brook, and then we'd pick up our sleds and go up to the horse farm, to the really big hill up at the Moreland property there.
Hmm.
And we would just slide and slide. And I remember you mentioning earlier about toboggans, and we used to use them, and that was the most amazing stuff, was tobogganing, not sledding.
Yeah, now, because the toboggan, well, it's first of all, you all pile on together, but does the toboggan go faster? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was, yeah, it was just slats of wood all put together.
Yeah, no, I know. And but it was faster, that was the point?
That was the point.
Oh.
We would start up at the top of the hill of the farm and shoot all the way down and have to make sure we'd get off before it hit the fence.
Yeah, you know, there's something you said about the brook at the end of your first sledding place, and you just reminded me that somewhere where I used to sled as a kid, there was a brook at the end, and the whole, you know, exciting part was that you'd have to turn your sled just at the right moment so you didn't crash into the brook.
So, well, yeah, that too, but just going down through the woods and ending up at the brook and then having to cross over it to go back up to the even bigger hill.
Uh-huh, yeah. And can you believe the energy we had? I mean, 200 trips up that hill and back, you know, sliding down, up the hill, sliding down, over and over and over again. Amazing energy.
And then later on, when I got a little bit older, that's actually where I learned how to ski, too, was on the same hill.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I wish I'd learned to ski.
Before, you know, they didn't even there was no chairlifts or anything. It was, walking up the hill and sliding down and walking up the hill.
Nice. Thanks a lot. I'm glad you called.
See, hey, one other thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 58 years old now, and I still love shoveling snow.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. You know, when it falls, you shovel it.
So you don't hire a plow. You get out there and you shovel.
That's it.
No matter how deep?
I beg your pardon?
No matter how deep the snow is?
No, no matter how deep the snow is.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
All right, glad you called.
Oh, thank
okay.
you.
You're welcome, bye-bye. It's kind of fun. It's fun to look out the window right now. If you're on the road, take it easy. I know, I was reading in the AAA. AAA has this newsletter that they send out, and I think the last one had this whole thing on snow stuff. And one of the things they said to do is, they said in the next storm, when one of the lots at, say, a supermarket is, or a big box store is empty, take the car down, you know, when it's safe and there are no cars around, and just start driving around, hitting the brakes hard, speed up a little, and feel the car do its little spin and wobbling, and just get used to that so that you can train yourself to have good reactions. You know, pump the brake and do the whole thing. Anyway, worth a try. Also, they advised in that article to keep an emergency bag in the car. And while the snow is coming down right now, as we're talking and doing this snow story show, it reminded me of their advice. And so I did this. I got an emergency kit together. They said it can happen so easily that you get a flat tire or the engine, something happens with the engine and you have to pull over. And in a busy time like this for towing companies, they might not get to you for hours and hours and hours. There's no heat if your car can't start. You've got to be prepared. And so I put an emergency kit, a blanket, extra gloves, an extra hat in a bag in the back of my car. And I am so glad I did. I think the only thing I'm missing is flares. So I think I should get them. Andre, Faith Middleton, welcome to our show on snow. Go ahead.
Hi, Faith. Thank you for taking my call. Our family is from Canada, and certainly with my parents who have been through most of their school days in the snow, when we moved to the United States, mother, who never even listened to the radio because she didn't understand the language, if school was canceled, she would send us anyway. And so off we went.
Here's the thing. I am so glad you brought this up, and here's why. In this article that we have posted at our site right now, at the end, there's a little story that says he's with a bunch of people and they're all staying together and they're in Canada. And he's from England, and so, you know, it's a big deal when it snows and everybody, you know, it's like here, you know, things come to a halt. And he said, here the Canadian snow is an irresistible incandescent white. Its glinting surfaces give me back my young days, and alongside them, a melancholic reminder of age. After my sweater, I pull on a kind of thermal vest, then a coat, knee long. My neck is wrapped in a scarf. My ears vanish behind furry muffs. Mitten fingers tie bootlaces into knots. Fortunately, the Canadians have no fear of winter. The snow is well superintended here. Panic of the kind that grips London or Washington, D.C. is unfamiliar to them. Stockpiling milk, bread, canned food is unheard of. Traffic jams, canceled meetings, energy blackouts are rare. The faces that greet me downstairs are all kempt and smiling. They know that the roads will have been salted, that their letters and parcels will arrive on time, that the shops and schools will be open as usual for business. So, in Canada, a whole other story.
Well, I think it is, and it remains that way today. And it recently snowed here. I'm in the northern part of Connecticut. And as I mentioned to my daughters, looking outside, I said, this is how Canada looks, where it was the nice, compact snow, but everything stayed as if it were permanent.
Mm.
And that's what they're familiar with, and they learn to live with it easily.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Snow stories on the show. So to continue a little quoting from this article on the science of the snowflake, the scientists classify the snowflakes by size and shape and symmetry. The main ways in which each vaporous hexagon forms and changes, it turns out, amount to several dozen or several score. For example, some snowflakes are flat and have broad arms resembling stars, so that meteorologists speak of stellar plates, while those with deep ridges are called sectored plates. Branchy flakes, like the ones seen in Christmas decorations, go by the term stellar dendrites. When these tree-like flakes grow so many side branches that they finish by resembling ferns, they fall under the classification of fern-like stellar dendrites. Sometimes snowflakes grow not thin but long, not flat but slender. They fall as columns of ice, the kinds that look like individual strands of a grandmother's white hair. Some, like conjoined twins, show 12 sides instead of the usual 6, while others, viewed up close, resemble bullets. Other possible shapes include the cup, the sheath, and those resembling arrowheads. Isn't that something? This is a scientist talking at a dinner party, where the whole conversation becomes about snow. That article from Discover Magazine is at our website right now. It's great. 203-776-9677 at our website, WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Richard, hi, it's Faith. Go ahead.
Hi, Faith. I really enjoy your programs. And
thank you.
This snowstorm kind of brings me back, and I have two stories that I want to tell you. They were when I was much younger than I am now. Snowstorms would always have my mom, she'd break out the Brer Rabbit molasses, and we would have a tachi pull. And we spent most of the afternoon doing that during the snowstorm.
No, wait a minute. I'm not sure I caught that word. You would do what?
We'd have a taffy pull, molasses taffy pull.
Oh, wow. So every snowstorm, that was your thing?
Yeah, well, not everyone, but quite a few of them that, you know, that we would experience, we did that.
Huh.
And the second story happens to be a historical thing. I don't know if you remember, but when John Glenn blasted into the, his free orbits, it snowed that day. So I remember playing out in the snow and coming back in, and my mom baked a cake in the shape of a rocket to congratulate John Glenn on his orbit around the Earth.
No. Oh,
absolutely.
I love that. What an image. Wow, thank you so much. And now we take it for granted. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, great to hear from you.
Yep.
Wow, bye-bye. Snow stories on the show. Thinking about a scene in Vermont, you know, as you're riding along the road, and sometimes the horses that are in the fields haven't been taken in as quickly as they might like. And when the snow is first coming down the way it is right now, you can see them, their coats, they're just covered with snow. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous sight. Okay, here we go. You know, the other thing about snow is how it's a time I love in New York City, especially wandering the Village. There's something so timeless and charming about the Village in New York in the snow. But the other thing about New York is how quiet it gets. Amazing. You never hear that kind of silence. Molly, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith. Thank you for reading the little smidgens of that article. They're great.
Yeah, isn't it something to think that a snowflake is like that? Go ahead.
So one of my very favorite snows was when I was pregnant with my daughter. My birthday is January 18th, and it happened on my birthday. We were living in a cabin in the woods in Gilead, Connecticut. And her father's birthday is the same as mine, January 18th. Hmm. He went out early in the morning. I thought to get firewood, and I was busy cooking a special meal for our birthday dinner that evening. And he was gone longer than usual. He used to come back, you know, to grab a bite to eat and warm up. But he was out the entire day. And when he finally came back, the snow was pretty deep by then. He popped into the cabin and he said, "Would you like to go out to eat?" And I burst into tears because I knew we didn't have any money and there was no way we could get to a restaurant. And before I could really carry on, he said, "Come on out." And he had built out of snow a restaurant. It was shaped like an egg. It was just like this huge snow egg with a little entryway and a little table. And I brought the food out. And he had little places where he had indentations with candles. And just candlelight enough is a warms the space like that. And so for our birthday dinner, we ate in this little egg-shaped restaurant.
Oh, that is the best.
It was really, really magical. Then we went back into the cabin to sleep. And when we came out in the morning, it had warmed up. And it was gone. It was just like a pile of snow there. It was like it never happened. It was so enchanting.
Oh, what a great memory. Oh, what a picture. Oh, thank you. That's a children's book right there.
Yeah.
Really wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. I'm glad you called. 203-776-9677, snow stories on the show. It is coming down. I can see right out the studio windows right now. We'll be right back. Call us. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. That's FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Snow stories on the show, your memories, maybe your traditions. I know people do sugar on snow. Some people go for sleigh rides because there are still sleighs on some of our farms. You know, the thing I was mentioning about New York City, how it goes quiet, one thing I didn't say is that around about the third day, as the snow starts to melt, all those drains clog, and there are lakes at every corner of slush that is so freezing cold, and it's up your shins, and boots are almost useless. That is the downside. Alex, Faith Middleton, welcome to our show.
Hi, big fan, first-time caller.
Oh, I'm glad you reached us.
The memory I remember most from growing up in Groton City, it's over by Long Island Sound in southeastern Connecticut, is making snow cream.
Oh, what's that?
Snow cream is where you take snow and orange juice and sugar and mix it together and hope that it tastes good.
Snow and orange juice and sugar? Wow.
Yes. I remember where I grew up, everyone lived really close next to each other, and every time it would snow, we would go over one of each other's houses and, you know, have snowball fights, build forts and everything, but mm-hmm. we would also make snow cream. And I recently tried it a couple of years ago, making it, and just did not taste as good as I remember it.
Yeah, and you did it with the orange concentrate, right? Or really squeezed oranges. Do you remember what...
We used real orange juice.
Wow. So usually people would use maple syrup. That'd be kind of interesting to now I'm really this. It would be really fun to do a sugar on snow recipe that's just killer. You know, I'm thinking a little maple syrup, a little lime juice, maybe a little orange zest, a little squeeze of fresh orange juice, and let's try that. We're gonna try that. I might try that tonight.
I think I might try that too.
Okay.
And then just another memory that I remember from, I forget the woman's name who called you, talked about the college snowball fight. I went to Southern Connecticut State University, and I remember it snowed once, and we got stuck on campus, and I was an RA, and everyone was like, oh, I don't want to go outside, I don't want to do anything, and I dragged half my residence outside, and we proceeded to have just, like, the most fun ever. I have pictures from... all of us playing out in the snow, and it was just a really fun, fun, happy memory.
That's great. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
I'm glad you called. You know, it's funny to be in your house and where traffic used to be. And this happens in New York, too, believe it or not. People are just walking down the middle of the road. And every once in a while, you'll see somebody cross-country skiing down the middle of the road. It's just an amazing sight. Carolyn, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Faith. I love the show.
Oh, thank you so much for being on it. So you have a memory,
My fondest memory of being in the snow is my father used to be a mechanic at a golf course, and they had all the families of the employees in the maintenance department, and they took all of us on a sleigh ride throughout the whole golf course. It was lovely, and we all wanted to go sledding, but they didn't have sleds, so someone went to the clubhouse and got lunch trays. And we all went sledding on these lunch trays, and my mom brought hot chocolate, and the sun was going down, and it was lovely.
Oh, that I love that description. The sleigh, you don't mean with a horse. Was this a truck that they were pulling?
Yeah, they have one of the gators they use to move things. But I mean, it was so nice, and I was constantly like, five.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I mean, the golf course is just a temple out there anyway. And with all that snow and, you know, being able to go on it like that. I mean, how great is that?
Oh, I know. It was nice. They only did it that one year, but it was lovely.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Memories. You know, some people create, as you can hear, people create traditions now. So we might hear about some of that, too. Gary. Hi, Faith Middleton. Go ahead.
Hi, Faith.
Hi, Gary. Great. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. I wanted to tell you a two-part comical story about the snow. About 40, 45 years ago, my father tells me the story that two friends of his who used to carpool home, Sam and Ernie, carpooled home in a blizzard. And halfway during the trip, Ernie turns to Sam and says, you know, Sam, maybe I should slip into the back seat to put more weight on the tires. And so they stop along the side of the street, and Ernie gets out to go into the back seat. And by mistake, Sam pulls off and leaves Ernie in the middle of a blizzard standing on the side, not realizing that Ernie is there. Sam travels for about maybe a quarter of a mile, and he sees a motorist stuck on the side of the road, and he stops off and says, can I give you a lift? And the motorist hops in the front seat. And they begin their journey, and Sam turns to the motorist and says, I'd like to introduce you to my friend Ernie in the back seat. And the guy turns around, and he doesn't see Ernie in the back seat, But the whole time, Sam is talking about Ernie, who's sitting in the back seat. And can you believe we rescued this guy, Ernie, who's sitting standing there by his car? Didn't we come along at the right time? So they ended up traveling probably about a mile, at which point the guy turns to Sam and says, you know, you can leave me out right here. And Sam says to the guy, I can't leave you out right here. It's the middle of a blizzard. This is right on the side of the road. Why don't you let me take you home, or at least take you to a gas station? And the guy argues his way out of it. And finally, Sam turns to the guy and says, no, okay, I'll let you out here. You know, no problem. He lets him off. Sam starts to continue home. He turns to Ernie and says, Ernie, you know, isn't that guy a nut? He wouldn't even stay in the car. I would have driven him to a gas station, and realizes that there's no Ernie in the back seat. I could share that story.
Yeah, no, that's a great story. That is a great story. That's a bar story right there. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Bye. Gary, Faith Middleton, thanks for calling 203. Oh, I'm sorry, Allison. Thanks for calling 203-776-9677. Snow stories on the show for obvious reasons. Go ahead, Allison.
Hi, Faith. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
This isn't as charming a story as some others, but it was a very vivid memory. We were expecting a blizzard like this when I was 15 years old. And my boyfriend and I were both 15 and passionately in love. And it was a Friday night, so we knew, you know, we'd have a long weekend snowed into our own homes. And we stayed on the landline all night, talking quietly. And about 5 o'clock in the morning, we set a plan together to leave our houses and meet halfway to each other's homes so that we could end up together snowed in at one of our houses. And we lived about 10 miles away from each other in separate towns.
Oh,
Before the days of cell phones, right? And we just bundled up with our boots and hats and set out on foot and ended up meeting halfway.
No.
In this blizzard. Yeah, there was about 10, 12 inches of snow by then. And I think we were successful. We ended up together all weekend at one of each other's houses.
Really? How old were you?
At the time, 15.
Don't forget the home, kids. Was that your first love?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Isn't that a powerful thing?
It is. I probably wouldn't do it now for my husband, right?
Oh, that's funny. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
I wouldn't sell yourself short in the charming department, by the way. 203-776-9677. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, Faith. I love your show.
Oh, thank you so much. Glad to have you on.
I have a childhood story. I'm 75 now, but... when it snowed in the morning, we would gather around the radio, holding our breath, waiting for Bob Steele to say, no school in New Britain. And I still have that feeling when it's snowing, that feeling of excitement, yeah. Although it's not that exciting, but yeah. That was like the highlight of the year when he would say, no school, New Britain. And yeah. I don't think I'll ever, ever, ever forget it.
Yeah, so we just stand around the kitchen, around the radio, waiting for the announcement, huh?
Yes, yes, yeah. And it's still, I to this day, I absolutely love snow. And here in Westerly, it is absolutely gorgeous and peaceful and quiet. And it's my favorite time. Huh. All our friends are in Florida, but we're here enjoying this beautiful, beautiful snow.
Do you feed the birds?
Pardon me?
Do you feed the birds?
Yes, yes. There's a ton of them out here. So we're enjoying them, too.
Are they eating right now, even in the snow?
Yes, they are. Yep.
No kidding.
They are. Yep.
Can you see them right now?
I can. I'm looking right out my sunroom window.
What's out there?
Some juncos, some cardinals, some wrens,
chickadees.
Woodpeckers are at the suet. So there's probably about 20 of them right now. So they're enjoying their snowy afternoon eating away.
Are you at a deer crossing path? Do you have deer in the...
Yes. Yeah. But they'll probably be by tonight getting the leftover bird feed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks. I love this part. Okay, thanks so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bob Steele, that, I remember that too, listening to him on the radio, waiting for him to say, also for me, TV, waiting to see the name of the school go flashing across the screen. Prue, hi, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, and I, you know, the subject of snow, as I was thinking about it, there were a number of stories that were coming up in my head, but the one that really won out was when, back in the late 60s, my family had a young American soldier back from Vietnam and his brand new Vietnamese bride. And one evening in the winter, all of a sudden there erupted this commotion, and the young man and his bride came running out and ran outdoors, and she's saying, "It's snowing! It's..." She had never seen snow in her life. And there she was, dancing around in all her Vietnamese grace, just having the most wonderful time dancing in the first snowfall she'd ever seen.
Oh, that's a great story. You know, we get used to it as because we see it as children, and so that first time, you know, goes missing unless you're a parent watching a child, you know?
Yeah.
So what a beautiful thing to see.
Well, wow. That was my top story.
Well, let me ask you, Prue, do you think that if you lived in a warm place and there, in you know, never to see snow again, would you miss it or would that be okay?
I would definitely miss it. The snow days that I love are the days that I can stay in and bake something or cook a hearty soup or, you know, and watch it out, you know, watch it and just feel cozy and comfortable and grateful for being warm and cozy inside.
Yeah, it's one of those fireplace days. I have a memory of, I was a reporter, a feature writer at the Providence Journal, and had an apartment, and it was a terrible snowstorm, and I said that I would stay home and write. It was the first feature I wrote for that paper, and I dragged the typewriter, you know, not electric, out into the middle of the living room, and I had a fireplace, so I built a big roaring fire, and there I sat as the snow came down out the window and in front of the fire writing my feature story. And every once in a while I would look up and think, wow, what a lucky person. Look at this. I'm being a writer. I'm being paid. I'm sitting in front of a fire. It was just an amazing, amazing experience. It was so beautiful. And so I now associate a roaring fire with every snowstorm. It's not complete somehow without a roaring fire.
Oh, yes. The fires are definitely very, very special.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Prue.
All right.
All right, take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Hi, Karen. We're doing a show on snow stories. Go ahead.
Hi, Faye.
Hi.
This is Karen in West Hartford. And,
you have about a minute.
I started a new tradition. And we have a great recipe for snow cream.
All right, what is it?
Okay, take a stainless steel mixing bowl and a big spoon. Set them out in the snow because you want them to get really cold. Then you scoop the snow into the bowl and you drizzle a can of condensed milk and kind of fold it gently into the snow.
Mm.
You can add a teaspoon of vanilla extract. My son and I did this last winter, and it had that pale yellow color, kind of like vanilla Häagen-Dazs. It was absolutely wonderful.
Oh.
And we're already asking to do it again.
Oh, yeah. I'm coming over. Thank you so much, Karen.
Thanks, you're welcome. Thanks, thank you.
Thank you for your call. Thanks to all of you who called. And if you didn't get through, we hope to catch you next time. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, great recipes, value wines, and cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.